This hurts me more than it hurts you at Ivica Zubats.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. Another season preview ready to go for you guys today. We're looking at the New Orleans Pelicans, and to discuss the New Orleans Pelicans, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. It is Jake Madison. Jake, welcome back to the show.
Of course, thanks for having me on today, Josh.
Lots to talk about with this Pelicans team, of course, with the projected number one pick in fantasy on this squad in Anthony Davis. We've got a lot for us to talk about.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with the projected record for this team. In a tradition like no other, Jake, you have gone above the Vegas over-under total of 44.5 by projecting 46 and 36. I don't think that's completely unrealistic. This is a team, of course, that did have DeMarcus Cousins for part of last season, not for other part, but have replaced him with Julius Randle. And we're looking at, I guess, internal improvement, a full season of Nikola Mirotic on this team. Maybe we see Alfred Payton back in his home area, be able to respond. So is that, what's your thought process of going to 46? Is that conservative for you? Do you think they could actually push to 50 or win and push to a top 3-4 seed in the West?
You know, I think if everything breaks right, yeah, probably they could. So I don't assume everything's going to break right for this team. Maybe that's me being a little too realistic, but we've kind of just seen it in the past. Injuries have kind of stayed around this franchise for a number of years now. And so because of that, I just peg them a little bit lower. You know, I think they're a solid Western Conference playoff team, but the Western Conference has gotten better. So it's just going to be harder to win those games that you're expected to win anyway, which means you're going to lose some of them. And that kind of leads me to like projecting them further away from 50 wins than closer to that. So I think, you know, healthy, and if things really start to click and guys really take off, this team could be very scary. They're going to run that hyper-fast Alvin Gentry style of a system that we saw after the DeMarcus Cousins injury, where they really pushed for the playoffs after that, after the trade deadline. I think that's going to be tough for most teams to try and compete with. And of course, when you have Anthony Davis on this team, who can kind of do it both offensively and defensively, they're very scary. And for that, to me, means they're going to be above that Vegas over-under, I think, by a little bit. And if things break well, maybe they push for, you know, a 4 or 3 seed in the West.
I think that I agree that they will go the over there on that Vegas total. Let's go on to the projected leading scorer on this team. No arguments here that it is going to be Anthony Davis, a guy that was the number two fantasy player nearly all season until the last day of the year, where he overtook James Harden for that spot. He seems to be, from most people I've speak to, the consensus number one. I don't fully buy that he is that far and away the number one guy. Remember, James Harden is still James Harden, and he was the number one player all of last season until that last day. But I think people are looking at what Davis did in a post-DeMarcus Cousins world, where he was, you know, significantly better, 20% better than James Harden over that time period. But Jake, the Pelicans team from the post-DeMarcus Cousins last year versus now is a little bit different, because you do have Julius Randle, who's in that mix. So it is an extra body, someone who's going to take some of that offensive responsibility away from Davis, and he's not going to be going out there putting up 34 points per night that he was doing in that time frame. So I still think that he is in discussion for one or two, but I don't think we're seeing post All-Star break Anthony Davis for a full season.
No, I don't think so either. And you mentioned it. The guy that's really going to maybe hurt him in terms of just a production and raw numbers standpoint and fantasy standpoint is going to be Julius Randle, because that's going to force Anthony Davis to play a little bit more outside. We saw him get away from that mid-range jumper just a little bit last season that he'd shown in the years before, which makes him such a threat in the pick-and-pop game. But now with Julius Randle and a big that wants to play inside that doesn't really have any range, it's going to force Davis out a little bit. Maybe he's going to take more threes because of that. Likely that's going to hurt his raw scoring numbers. It's going to take away rebound chances and opportunities for him. I think they're a great fit in terms of actual basketball, and this is going to be a great thing. But if we're looking at it from a fantasy perspective, certainly you're going to see Davis not put up quite the same numbers alongside Julius Randle than he does, say, with a guy like Nikola Mirotic.
Yeah, I do think that that will impact him somewhat. Now, what we also saw from Davis in that post All-Star period, which really did jump his numbers up, 3.4 blocks per game and 2 steals per game. Numbers which were nowhere near what he'd done, especially the steals in the previous parts of his career. For the year, he was just at 1.5. Last year, 1.3. The year before, 1.3. The year before, 1.5. So that really jumped up. And the blocks went from 2.2 the year before to the year before that, up to 3.4 in that 26-game sample. So, you know, while Randle is not a good rim protector and Davis is going to have to be doing a lot of that, neither is Mirotić necessarily. The blocks could come up. I think expecting 2 blocks and, sorry, 2 steals and 3.5 blocks, which he did, along with 30 points, along with 12 rebounds, and doing it on high efficiency, which made him, yeah, far and away that number one guy post All-Star, those defensive numbers probably aren't going to withhold for a 75-game season.
Now, we've seen it in years past with this team, too, that their perimeter defense has been pretty bad. And, yeah, Holiday's playing at the top of his game. You're kind of upgrading from Rondo and the lack of perimeter defense there. You get Solomon Hill back, who at least is all right defensively, probably above average, though offensively not good. But still, we've seen with their bad perimeter defense, it just leaves the rim just getting blitzed game after game. Omer Asik was an elite rim protector at one point, but he can't do it against 20 shots per game. And you might see that happen at times this year with Anthony Davis down low. I'm a little bit higher on Randle as a rim protector after seeing him maybe in the second half of last year, but it's still going to be Anthony Davis doing the majority of that, and teams are still going to try and go right at him when you have porous perimeter defense. That got locked down a little bit better, but if they revert from the defense they showed in the second half of the year after starting off really poorly to start the season, I think that's where you're going to see those block numbers drop, or maybe he gets into foul trouble and keeps him out of games, things like that. That's where I'm kind of concerned on the defensive side. I thought he should have been in a better version of the conversation for defensive player of the year just overall with some of the numbers he put up and when you really watch him take away the paint. But you can only do that for so much, and if it's happening game after game and you're getting blitzed, that's where it starts to hurt.
I don't have any problem with thinking he's going to get over 2.5 blocks per game. I just think you're getting 3.5 is probably pushing it a little bit much. I have him as the number one guy. ESPN has him as number one. Yahoo's got him at number two at the moment. It's a no-brainer that he is in that top two, but if you went for James Harden at number one, I don't think there'd be any, I wouldn't have any issue with it. I wouldn't be like, yeah, shouting you down, what are you doing? Like anything like that. Davis is right up there, but just expecting that insane level of production, 30 and 11 with 2 steals and 3.5 blocks, is unprecedented, and I don't think that's going to be able to stick for an entirety of a season. I think at some point as well, you know, people are always going to talk about Davis and injuries. He's been 75 games each of the last two seasons, still leads the league in trips to the locker room, but there's a lot of precaution in that. You know, I bang this drum all the time, Jake, about Anthony Davis and his injuries, but he's been pretty good recently.
Yeah, he has. As you said, 75 games each of the past two seasons. That's by far the most in his career. And he's kind of starting to be a little bit more consistent with staying on the court. As you said, particularly earlier in his career with Monty Williams there too, they really did just kind of baby him a little bit, overprotect him a little bit. And we all know that if he goes down for any real extended period of time, this team is going to be done for. So they still have a lot of that precaution with him. Also, you never know if this guy's going to grow like a third arm for all the x-rays that he gets, and maybe that just makes him a better NBA player overall here.
More blocks.
But as you said, he leads the game with the blocks that would then be huge, right? He does lead the league, though, in trips to the locker room and questionable to return. I wrote a preview article here for a local alt weekly in New Orleans where I just threw that in like 10 times throughout the year saying this is what's going to happen. And I just, by sheer luck, got 3 of those games where he's questionable to return, because this is something that just happens so damn often that you're bound to get them. So that's a concern. He played 75 games, but he's leaving maybe 10 of those early and only giving you a half, and he still managed to put up these numbers. So if he stays healthy for a full year, you just got to kind of wonder at what he is capable of doing.
He still played 2700 minutes, in excess of 2700 minutes, so a huge amount. And look, I'm looking at his log from last season. On the 7th of March, he went to the locker room with an ankle injury. He missed the next game. The next game, he came out, played 40 minutes, and had 25 points, 11 rebounds, 3 steals, and 10 blocks. So yeah, the recovery was fairly good from Anthony Davis, and that was the case all season. He'd leave a game, he'd come back, he'd sit out, he'd come back the next game, and the numbers would still be fine. And I feel like we can put that to bed, but in saying that, hopefully nothing goes wrong, but anything can happen at any time. If we want to talk about guys though who are currently injured, Alexey Ajinsa has had this knee problem for, it seems like, forever. Did he even play a single game last year? I don't even think he got on the court at all last year, did he?
No, he was out the whole time, and you know the Pelicans would like to try and move him at this point. It's likely going to take, you know, a second round pick, maybe a late for something like that to try and move on from him. But he's an expiring deal. Maybe that helps them. But I don't think he's really kind of factoring into their long-term plans or even their plans for this season. I think, you know, for that backup big spot behind Anthony Davis, behind Julius Randle, Nikola Mirotic, they're going to be looking at the immortal Emeka Okafor or a guy like Jahlil Okafor alongside maybe Cheick Diallo, though he hasn't kind of progressed, I think, as much as I'd like to have seen from him, but certainly he'll have some opportunity and some chances to be able to get significant minutes this season. But Ajinsa, I think, is a guy that we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on because I just don't expect much from him this year.
Let's talk about a guy we should spend some time on, and that is Julius Randle. Comes over from the Lakers. We've referenced him a little bit already. He really did explode in the second half of last season, a top 50 player over the last 2 months of the year, averaging almost 20 points and 9 rebounds in 32 minutes per game and 3 assists per game. He's never going to put up big steal or block numbers. He's at half a steal and half a block per game last season. In that stretch where he was top 50, was at 0.7 and 0.4, but his efficiency has risen 56 and 75%, the first time in his career that he was able to get over the 50% mark and improved his free throw shooting as well. 62% true shooting over that last 2 month stretch when he was playing those elevated minutes. I think the Pelicans have a realistic chance of having four top 50 fantasy guys this coming season, Mirotic, Randle, Holiday, and Davis, which would be fairly unprecedented to have three big men there. But Randle is going to come in. He's going to play a large role. He only played 26 minutes a night last season. I think he may struggle. I think he'll struggle to get back to that 20 points, 9 rebounds that he saw after the Larry Nance trade in LA. But he's a key piece here. The question I guess I have for you, Jake, is he starting for this team? Or will it matter? There'll just be all 96 front court minutes divided between Mirotic, Randle, and Davis.
So I don't have the answer to that. I think we're going to really kind of find that out once this team hits training camp and preseason. We'll kind of get an idea of what the rotation might be, because you could make an easy argument that Randle should start or that Mirotic should start in the front court alongside Anthony Davis. And maybe it just depends on matchup and what you need. If you need some more shooting out there throughout Mirotic, if you just want kind of a bigger, beefier body throughout Julius Randle. And I think Randle is just, it's like you said, a three-man rotation for the 96 front court minutes between those three guys. I think that's really going to be the majority of it. Maybe a guy like Diallo or Okafor, if he makes the team, you know, gets 5 minutes here and there, but it's not going to be anything significant. And those guys are all going to get playing time. That's likely going to be the first substitution, either Mirotic or Randle coming on for the other one. And I think they fit well, both of them, next to Anthony Davis. Julius Randle, I'm kind of excited to see running the fast break with this team, which they're going to want to be doing entirely. He can just get the ball. He's got decent enough handles to go court to court with it. He's a good rebounder. You secure that rebound and you just get out and run. You're going to have Anthony Davis and Julius Randle with a full head of steam coming down at you in the fast break. That is going to be tough to stop. The one thing I'm really kind of excited to see if he's actually developed this is we've seen him shooting more range in his like workouts and things like that. He's trying to develop a jumper. He's retooled his shot mechanics. This is a guy who takes something like 80% of his shots right around the rim or within the paint. If he can develop a little bit of range and space the court just a little bit better for Anthony Davis in the half court when they're not running that Gentry style system, I think is where he could make it a very big impact as well. And you don't need to worry about him maybe being a liability at times in that mindset.
Let's hope he can, because he's been a dreadful shooter throughout his career. He's yet to crack 28% from three through his first few seasons, or first four seasons in the NBA, just 22% from three last season, and took only half an attempt per game. So if that can increase somewhat, or even marginally, it's going to be a key part. Even if he starts taking more threes, not even necessarily making huge amounts more, that could be impactful there as well. But I think he's a significant option this season. Yahoo's got him ranked pretty aggressively at 68th. I still think that he can easily beat that. It's about the right sort of spot for him for this coming year, but the lack of defensive stats I think will always limit his overall upper end upside, just because he's not coming in and giving you 1.2 steals or 1.2 blocks, and he's not hitting threes as well. So sort of subpar contributions in those three categories could help him. But what I do think will improve with him this year are the assist numbers. He saw his assist numbers go from 3.6 to 2.6 with the addition of Lonzo Ball in LA last season. Elfrid Payton's not a guy who's having the ball as much as what Lonzo did. And I think they'll use Randle a little bit more to run things. And I think you can see those assist numbers climb back up, which will be key to him getting to that mark where he could become a top 50 guy, far from a guarantee, but he could get into that situation. Jake, the two-way contract situation on this team, currently we've only got Trevon Blewett, who was excellent in summer league. We talk about guard depth on this team being an issue. Is there any reason to suspect that they will use Blewett a little bit more, an undrafted player out of Xavier, I believe, who, again, looked really, really strong in summer league for this team?
Yeah, he was just lights out from three in summer league, particularly those first two or three games. And then teams kind of keyed in on him a little bit, and he wasn't as effective as he was before, but definitely worth that two-way contract. And given the injuries that's happened to this team, there's a chance he's going to get significant minutes. I think they're very high on him. I think they love his shooting, and with a big like Anthony Davis, more shooters the better, alongside Drew Holiday as well. Get a guy who can space the court properly for you. So he's going to get looks. Certainly. Whether he's going to make the most of them, I'm not sure, or whether he's capable of doing that. Again, it's summer league. There's only so much to take away from it there, and he's undrafted for a reason. But he's a lights-out shooter. He kind of lit up all of his opponents at Xavier over kind of two or three years there. So there's high hopes. I think they're going to try and give him every chance because this team lacks kind of perimeter shooting at times. So they'll want him to succeed. And you never know. Again, injuries can strike, and this is a guy that will get called up because, as we've said, guard depth isn't the greatest here in New Orleans right now.
This is a team that I think many people wouldn't necessarily be aware of. We've referenced it already, but they led the NBA in pace last season, and there's a chance that without Cousins for the whole season, that can actually go up. Obviously, they can't be higher than the first ranked team, but I think they'll see that pace go up. Basketball Reference has him listed as a pace of 100.5 possessions. With the offensive rebound shot clock decision, it probably adds an extra possession or two per game, and the fact that you're replacing Cousins with Randle should increase that pace as well, and even to a degree, yeah, Peyton replacing Rondo, he is a faster player too. This team could push even further ahead of the rest of the NBA. Do you agree that that's what they'd be looking to do?
Yeah, that's entirely what they want to do. They play fairly fast. They were, I believe, top 10 in pace with DeMarcus Cousins last season. And then after the injury, kind of once they figured it out, their new style, I mean, it was just hyper light speed going the rest of the season. We saw it at a pace that we haven't seen in something like 20 years in the NBA. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be sustainable over 82 games playing at that fast of a level, but they're going to play fast and they're going to be probably top five in the NBA in pace. They want to get out and run. The way it works, and I wrote about it a couple of times last season, is they want shots early in the shot clock, ideally in transition. It's not quite 7 seconds or less Suns, but it's something similar to that. A lot of these guys aren't great shooters in that set, and they're not taking the best shot at times, but because they're taking so damn many of them, that it kind of works out over the long run, and that's how they're able to sustain this offense. But a shooting something between any of them or any one guy or two guys in particular, that's where maybe you see kind of the offense get derailed, but they're still going to get out and try and run, particularly with a big like Julius Randle, who can take it coast to coast alongside Anthony Davis.
Yeah, so that's going to be key, and it is going to increase a bunch of their stats if that offensive rebound thing has the impact, plus if they just go completely, you know, high in terms of those numbers that we saw in that second half of last season. It's going to push a lot of these guys up pretty considerably in terms of their overall value. You've got the most likely player to be traded on this team is Solomon Hill. I think a lot of people forget about Solomon Hill. He was the Pelicans' projected starter before that hamstring injury last season. He started for them the year before. He offers very, very little offensively, but can be a strong defensive player. But you know, where's he sort of fit in now? It's hard to find it with Darius Miller showing what he could do as a shooter, Etwan Moore manning that spot at small forward. Where's Hill even fitting in now? Because as we've talked about, getting minutes at the four is going to be tough with Mirotić and Randle getting so much playing time there.
Yeah, you know, there wasn't really an easy answer on most likely guy to be traded because I don't really think many are likely to be traded, maybe Mirotić, but I think they'd rather try and keep him and re-sign him next year. At least they have his bird rights compared to Randle's, which they don't. So I think that makes him more likely to stay after one season than Randle does. And there's just not a lot of assets on here to really kind of make a move. And I know they'd like to get rid of Solomon Hill's $12.5 million, $13 million, whatever it is. So that's why I picked him there. But his spot's kind of weird. You know, you would have him kind of maybe projected to be the starter. And I think the Pelicans have a lot of ideas of what they want to do, but they don't have anything anything set in stone just yet. Etuan Moore is undersized at that three spot. I think he plays out of position there. I think they'd like him to kind of be in the backcourt alongside Jrue Holiday just a little bit more, and he can do some ball handling duties there. Darius Miller's kind of their wing, the one wing they had all last season. He played better than expected, shot the ball particularly well, but he doesn't give you much else out of that. Whereas Solomon Hill at least is sound defensively, so I think really he, Miller, and Moore are going to kind of man that small forward spot. I think it means Moore can then play the two guard, maybe with the second unit. Hill comes in and you shift him over a little bit there, something like that. You know, he gives you just so little offensively, and the Pelicans overpaid him. Just nothing. It, you know, he had a very good postseason 1 year and then just got paid, and he has not hit threes consistently. You know, after a year off, and we saw him not play well in the playoffs against that Portland team when he was starting to come back, it's going to be tough. You know, I think you're going to see his minutes drop significantly this year as the Pelicans just look to kind of try and move him and figure out what to do here.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's going to be seeing much playing time at all. His regular season when he returned last year, he shot 19% from three and 27% from the field. And to throw in for good measure, he had 50% from the line. So it was a real disaster. He's not going to be providing really any value, and I don't think he's even going to come close to cracking the top 300 for this season for fantasy. For the draft, the Pelicans had one pick, Jake. It was Tony Carr at 51, and to say he was underwhelming at Summer League would probably be a little bit too positive on the way that he played. He's not currently signed on this team. There is a two-way spot open. What's the thought on Tony Carr? Are they just like, ooh, this didn't really look good? We're just not going to be entertaining this. There is still some room on the main roster plus that two-way spot. Do you expect him to get a roster spot, or is it just going to be like, nah, look, we're good?
No, so I think he's actually signed in Italy now. I don't expect to see him. Yeah, he signed with, I think he's playing in Turin, maybe for Torino. And that came out during Summer League. He was that underwhelming that I think his agent rushed to get him an overseas deal so that his client would get some money, because certainly, you know, even at the opening press conference where they announced him, they said, you know, he's going to have to earn a spot, and it wasn't guaranteed. So, I mean, that's a name alongside like a Jinsa. I think we can just kind of cross him off. And, maybe, you know, they'll bring him back in future years. We've seen the Pelicans do that after good overseas showings by some of these guys, Darius Miller in particular. But Carr is just looked terrible in Summer League so far.
Yeah, he was dreadful. He couldn't hit a shot. He was really, really poor in Summer League. Let's talk about the starting unit for this team, Jake. We've talked about a couple of those guys, Julius Randle and Anthony Davis. Let's go with Alfred Payton here, who you've got as the projected starting point guard. Disastrous stint for him in Phoenix. He was pretty strong, though, in Orlando, did what he needs to do. We know that he can't shoot, but he's one of those guys, like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who can't shoot, but still puts up a solid field goal percentage, which is important for us in fantasy, that he's not, you know, disastrous. He's not Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, going out there shooting 39% from the field. He can actually get you, you know, 49, 50% from the field because of his ability to get to the rack. He is back home. He's from Louisiana, played his college ball in Louisiana as well, and there is an opportunity here. Do you think that Payton plays more or less minutes than Rondo played in that same role last season?
I think he ends up getting a little bit more, actually. Part of it was because you just had to bench Rondo at times, whether it was him just kind of being Rondo and not mentally checked into a game, which got him benched a number of times, or just being unplayable in the final 5 minutes or so in crunch time because of the defensive issues. At least Peyton's going to go out there and kind of give you an effort, and I think he's very well fitted for what he is. Let's not say he's an amazing player who's going to light it up, but he can play in this kind of system, the faster-paced system, with Orlando last year in 44 games. Games where they played a bit faster than they did in Phoenix. You know, he averaged 13 points and 6.3 assists. I think that's pretty good there. He's going to get lots of easy looks at the rim. We've seen what guards can kind of do in this offense with their driving ability, with Davis commanding a double team down low, making it harder to rotate over on those guys as they attack the paint and the rim. So I think he's going to get chances to score, and I think he's the projected starter right now. Again, I don't think anything's really set with this team. Maybe they put Holiday in that role depending on the lineups they want to use in their rotation, but I would assume he's the assumed starter here, and I think he can do really well. He's going to get out in the fast break and run. He's quick. He's got a lot of upside, and like you said, he's from here. He's a local guy. If you were to ever come to the Orlando games when they played here in New Orleans, had about a section of 100 people cheering on anything he did, and sometimes it's just kind of that clean slate in a comfortable situation really can make a difference for a player.
Yeah, look, he was a disaster in Phoenix, but he was solid in Orlando, and I think that he's fine. ADP on Yahoo 96, totally fine. I think he can be around that level. He could break that level. If he gets, instead of 6 assists, if he gets 7.5 assists, then he considerably beats that number there. He can generate steals. And again, the free throws are poor, but they're on low volume as well, so they're not a massive handicap in that area. So I think Peyton's fine as a late type of point guard pick. The other guy there, of course, who'll be starting next to him, or at least starting in the backcourt in some position, we know that's going to be the case. That's Drew Holiday, who was unbelievably good last season. We know how good he was in the playoffs, but he was excellent throughout the regular season as well. The 19th ranked player overall. Now, in the year before, when DeMarcus Cousins came over, Holiday was a disaster. For some reason, he could not hit a single shot. And that made people really skeptical of him last season. Oh man, look how bad he was with Cousins there. But it was stuff that was not a result of Cousins being there. And that's why you have to dig into these things a little bit more. The shots actually started to fall for him. He went at 49% from the field, 34% from three. He did everything he needed to do. And I think we're going to be seeing another top 20-ish type season from Drew again this season. Yahoo's got him ranked maybe a little bit higher at number 15. I think he's a comfortable second-round guy. He's over the injury problems, the leg fractures that plagued him. But that's probably 2-3 years ago now, Jake. So everything's full steam ahead for Drew, and I think we should be seeing similar numbers that we saw last season.
Yeah, you know, I was one of those people that was really down on him going into next year. I thought the court spacing with Davis and Cousins and him really didn't fit. But as you said, once you really dive into the numbers and really watch his film, he just went through a weird shooting slump where he just couldn't hit things. Even his free throw percentage was uncharacteristically low for him during that time, which just meant something else was going on. Now, he's gone past a lot of the issues, the leg issues, the family issues. Don't forget about that. That can take a toll on you. Oh, and he wasn't with the team 2 years ago to start the season. Now that he's moved past that, he's in kind of a good spot mentally, emotionally, family-wise, I think it's a big thing. And he's got a lot to build off of. All of a sudden, he thrives in this faster-paced system. They moved him away from being kind of that pure point guard, that distributor, which doesn't fit his skill set the best. All of a sudden, they just made him a more instinctual player rather than kind of being a cerebral player, which he really isn't. Just get out and attack and use your body to score. He is such a strong player, and the way he moves his body when he's scoring at the rim makes him a great finisher down low when he drives. And when he gets in that attack mindset, he is tough to stop. And then we know the defensive side of the ball too, what he's capable of doing there. And you probably have the steal numbers better than I do, but I would imagine that puts him kind of high up on this list. He shut down that Portland backcourt in the playoffs.
The other thing that's also about him is he blocks shots as a point guard, averaged 0.8 blocks last season, which is huge for a point guard. That's up in John Wall type territory, really rarefied air in terms of point guard numbers, and he's able to do that. And the other thing with him is his assist numbers took a big step back when he played with Rondo, but when Rondo wasn't there, he was putting up those numbers back to similar numbers when he was the number one point guard. But over the last 25 games of the season, he saw his assists per 100 possessions jump back up to 9.8. For reference, the year before they were at 10.7, and for the course of the year last season, 7.8. So he was able to get those assist numbers back with Peyton being less of a ball dominant guy than what Rondo was. I think that Holiday's assist numbers are going to jump back up this season. He's going to be a really solid top 25 type of a player and second round guy for his overall numbers. Now, the last member of the starting... Well, the projected starting five for this team is Etuan Moore, who had a surprisingly strong season last year, the 126th ranked player on the back of some crazy shooting numbers, 51% from the field, 43% from three. Now, it's not the first time he's had a 40% plus year shooting from three. His last year in Chicago, he did that as well. Played 31.5 minutes per night. I think with Hill returning, we may see Moore lose a couple of those minutes this year. Do you think that he is over under that 31.5 minutes he played last season?
Yeah, you know, I think Moore's going to come close to that number. There's a little bit more depth at the guard spot now with Solomon Hill back. We don't expect him to be a factor, but he's going to get minutes at times. And if he's needed defensively, maybe that's kind of what gets him out there. Moore does what he can defensively, but he's a bit undersized at that position playing at the three, which he was doing in the starting lineup. And I think the Pelicans would not like him to be in that spot long term. So I think you'll kind of see him playing a number of different spots, which means his minutes should be good. He's going to be playing the two guard. He's going to be playing the three. And he's just an overall kind of really really dependable player. You know, he shoots well. At one point, he was leading the league in three-point percentage. He shot 42.5 last year on 3.7 attempts. That's good. That's kind of what you want. He's a court spacer who can kind of handle the ball at times, play kind of that secondary ball handler role. When the ball hits his hands, he keeps him moving overall. Nothing flashy about him, but he had a pretty solid year last season. And also, he played in every single game. That's something he's very proud of. He doesn't really get injured. He wants to be out on the court. You know, sometimes the best ability is availability.
Yeah, exactly. He is a guy who out there, and again, as I said, the shooting from him, he's been able to do this before with that three-point shooting. I do worry a little bit about the his shooting from mid-range, 53% according to Clean the Glass. 50% on his mid-range jumpers, which is probably something that's going to be tough for him to stick at. 41 the year before, 44 the year before, 46 the year before. And that, you know, is probably unlikely to stick at that level. And we remember last season, he still only topped out at the 126th ranked player, playing 32 minutes and shooting the absolute lights out. So I expect somewhat of a regression there, even if it's not in minutes, if it is just in overall contribution, because I think keeping that mid-range shooting at that extreme level, along with the 43% from the three-point line, that might be a tough ask for someone like Etuan Moore. So he's a very, very low upside guy, a relatively reliable guy, but I'd expect somewhat of a regression for him as we head into this coming season. In terms of value guys on this team fantasy-wise, everyone seems to be ranked around the right spot. Davis, Holiday, Randall, Payton, even Etuan Moore. There's no one really sort of egregiously ranked, but there is one guy we haven't spoken about yet on this show, Jake, and we have to because he's one of my favorite players, and that is Nikola Mirotic, who probably forced the Bulls to pick two spots later than they probably should have due to his play there. Came across, struggled maybe a little bit early on with New Orleans, but was absolutely on fire through the playoffs, and he's going to be a key part of this rotation, and he is the fourth guy that I think has a chance to be a top 50 player on this team. I was critical of the way that Gentry handled him in the regular season, playing a lot more Emeka Okafor minutes than I thought that they should have, and with Mirotic being limited. But I think that Gentry may have learned his lesson in terms of getting him out there and how key that Mirotic can be. What sort of role were we expecting for him this season? Is it playoff Mirotic? Is it the 25-minute bench role that he saw when he came across after the trade? Like, how are we looking at him?
You know, so that's kind of my biggest question with this team is how are they going to use him? Because when he did come over, he really did struggle. Now, part of that might have been shifting his family and there's other things on his mind. And we've talked about kind of how the mental side of things can really affect these NBA players. And I can tell you that that was a big concern of his. That was one of the reasons why he wanted that player or that team option picked up so that he wouldn't have to move his family again. That's very important to him. But he kind of got in his own head mentally, but he managed to, shake it off by shaving his beard. And once he did that, it really just made a world of difference. I don't know if it was a confidence thing or what have you. And that led to such a high level of play for him. I think he played, I think his sweet spot is right around 25, 26 minutes, playing the close to that he was doing last year. I think at times you could see that was just a little too much for him. Maybe mid-season having kind of that role change wasn't what he was expecting or what he just couldn't handle it. I think with the offseason now and everything, he might be able to kind of continue that play at that 30 minutes per game. Starter alongside Anthony Davis with Randall coming off the bench. This dude's awesome. He can rebound. He gets some blocks on an occasion. He's not a consistent guy doing that, but man, he came up with some key blocks and just hustles on certain plays. And that's kind of what you want out of this guy, particularly alongside Anthony Davis, who can clean up a lot of his mistakes. And, I expect the shooting to be higher than it was last season for him. Now that he's kind of here in New Orleans, he's established. He'll understand that role a little bit better that he's going to be playing the higher minutes. And I think that's going to be really big for him. And I expect maybe a bit of a bigger season for him this coming year than he had last year.
I think we're going to see his usage potentially drop. He had a pretty strong usage last season, but adding Randall into that mix might make it tough for him to continue a 22% usage rate, which he had as a member of the Pelicans. But you're right, he's really, really good. He puts up numbers in multiple categories. He hits threes, he scores, he rebounds, he gets steals and blocks. Not huge numbers, but decent. Gets to the line, hits his free throws. He is really, really good. I've been banging on this drum for quite a while about Nikola Mirotic. I think he's a strong guy to pick in that 60 to 80 type range in drafts. That's about where he's going. Totally fine in terms of getting him in that area. The numbers were great. And I talked about Gentry perhaps misusing him and putting him in this bench role with Okafor starting, but even before the playoffs, the last five games of the regular season, they went back to Mirotić starting. And this is what he put up, Jake. 25-7, 31-16 with five triples, 28-6-4 with three steals and six triples, 24-16 with two steals, a block and four triples, and 21-15 with a steal and a block. They were his last five regular season games in that more expanded role versus what we'd seen basically through the majority of March, and he killed it in that role. And, you know, given the level of talent discrepancy between he and Randle and then the next backups, whether that's Okafor or Diallo or even the other Okafor, I think we're going to be seeing those three play nearly all those minutes. You could even push Solomon Hill and Darius Miller into spot minutes there, and they're going to get the bulk of this playing time, you know, leaving guys like Diallo and the two Okafors perhaps on the outside looking in. But I want to ask, you know, wrap this up with one last question, and that is about the two Okafors here. I think that they're all probably they're competing for one roster spot. Emeka's contract is non-guaranteed, as is Jahlil Okafor's. Emeka is 36 years of age. Given the way that Gentry went away from Emeka at the end of the regular season and in the playoffs, how do you think that this is going to play out? Who do you think is going to be that guy that gets that luck? Maybe they both get a spot and they waive someone like DeAndre Liggins or Troy Williams, who they have signed. But how is that last roster spot going to play out?
Yeah, you know, it's between the two Okafors for that. And I think they both give you kind of different things. You know, I think Emeka Okafor is the safer choice. He played particularly well in the spot minutes that he did. He's not a guy you want playing any minutes in the playoffs when you shorten your rotation, but you need guys to get you there in the first place. So giving him 8 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes here and there, I think he can do his job. He's a very strong rebounder, too. He's got that back tap offensive rebound ability where he just kind of hits it out, kind of like a volleyball type move, which is effective, particularly for this Pelicans team that doesn't go after offensive boards. However, there's just no upside there. And if he's going to play limited minutes, or it's going to be a limited minute role, maybe you give it to the younger Okafor, the guy with some upside that was a top three pick in the NBA draft that maybe can give you some more, something more dynamic. So I think it's between those two guys for that final roster spot. And I think if I had to guess, I think it would eventually be Jahlil Okafor. I don't think Emeka Okafor is going to do it. I think he'll eventually get waived and then maybe brought back in on a 10-day contract when you need him at times, something along those lines. Just because, again, whoever gets this role is going to get so little minutes, you may as well give it to the younger guy with more upside and keep him around on your team in the chance that he impresses.
I'm glad you said that, because that's the exact way that I see it. I think Jahlil comes in, he's not going to be... I've seen people mention, oh man, he's in a great situation, Jahlil, in New Orleans. He's going to get an opportunity.
He's just not going to play. Even if he's really good, he's playing max 10 minutes a game. Yeah. If he's really good, that's it. And there's only so much you can do with that kind of role.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, even if Jahlil does make the final roster, don't get sucked into it. Oh, man, he's in shape. It's finally happening. Because we heard it last year in Philadelphia. We heard it last year in Brooklyn. It's not going to happen. And Mirotić, Randle, and Davis, there's your big men. Like, that's it. And, you know, Cheick Diallo is probably a better player, especially, we know defensively he is, but he hasn't yet taken those necessary steps. But I thought Diallo showed some signs last season, Jake, of being at least solid enough, but Gentry seems to have quite a sour taste about him in his mouth.
Yeah, I think he just doesn't trust him. And, you know, last season, Gentry was coaching for his job. So you're going to lean on the guys you trust and not the guys necessarily with upside and things like that. And we've seen it. He's energetic. He is springy. He jumps up and down. He runs really well. And he shows all these traits that should make him kind of a good NBA player, or at least a rotation guy. And he's just never really put it together. He's looked good in summer league when he's gotten the opportunity for that. But again, he's just never really had the minutes to kind of get that role that he needs, maybe to show what he can do. There's foul issues there when he's out on the court too, which really limit his effectiveness. He's a guy I think a lot more fans are higher on than I am in particular. And, you know, if he gives you anything, it's what we say in New Orleans, it's lanyap. It's just kind of something extra there. And again, it's that fourth big role at best. He's only getting so many minutes. There's only so much he can do. And if he just goes out and rebounds a little bit, I think you're happy with what he does.
Yeah, I am interested in seeing what Diallo can do, but it hasn't been pretty promising so far throughout his career. There's been a few moments, but again, getting the trust of the coaching staff, and again, there's just no minutes to go around in that front court, so it's going to be very limited from him for this season. Jake, before I let you go, just let people know what you've got cooking over at Locked On Pelicans at the moment.
Yeah, of course, over at Locked On Pelicans, we've been breaking down the schedule in depth for New Orleans. This is a pivotal year for this team. Are they going to be able to kind of keep up what they did in the second half of last season over a full 82 games? So we'll be looking at the schedule, where they're going to hit rough patches, where they have their best stretch to kind of make a playoff push or improve their seeding, different things like that. And of course, we'll have all the previews on all the guys and everything you want to know with this team as we get closer and closer to training camp.
So go and check out Locked On Pelicans. Go follow Jake on Twitter at NolaJake. I got that right, didn't I?
You nailed it.
Yep, go and follow Jake over there. Follow me at RedRock_Beeble and go and give both of our podcasts a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can find us also on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and you can find this show on YouTube. You may already be watching it here. Go give a thumbs up, leave a comment. Jake, thanks again for jumping on and talking about the Pelicans for this upcoming season.
Of course, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Julius Randle.